The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hey, this is Matt Lanter, the voice of Anakin Skywalker in Star Wars The Clone Wars. You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars. This is where the fun begins.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember, the Force will be with you, always.
You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away. From movies to books, TV shows, and more, we're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in the Star Wars universe. And today, we're discussing The Bad Batch Season 3, Episodes 6 and 7, entitled Infiltration and Extraction. Be sure to follow The Secrets of Star Wars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast app, or on the StarQuest YouTube channel. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, on X, where we are at SQPN, or on Instagram, where we are at StarQuest Network. And, of course, be sure to get your official Secrets of Star Wars gear at sqpn.com/merch. I'm your host for tonight, Thomas Salerno, and joining me tonight on the panel is Josh Bigley. Hello, Josh.
Hello, hello.
And John Coral. Hello there, John.
Hello.
All right, so these two episodes are kind of essentially a two-parter, although it's not billed as that. But they definitely go together, so I'm glad we're reviewing them together. And before we dive in, I just want to say that on a personal note, this is kind of a nice full circle for me at SQPN, because the first StarQuest podcast I was familiar with was this one, long before I was hosting here or being on panels or anything. So to finally get to host Secrets of Star Wars is a very delightful little full circle for me. But yeah, the first episode, Infiltration. But before that, actually, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this kind of two-parter on both episodes. Your general thoughts, what you like and didn't like. John, how about you? What did you think?
I really liked it overall because, I mean, the action was really quick from the start. And it really keeps pushing the story forward pretty much. So, I really enjoyed it. There wasn't too much that I really disliked in it because, like I said, it drove the story, and I do like seeing a little bit more development with Crosshair and stuff as well. But it was a really good episode, or two part.
How about you, Josh?
Yeah, you know, I was worried after they, you know, got Omega back, it was going to be kind of this very weird story, sort of like how they had with Grogu in the Book of Boba Fett, or Mandalorian Book of Boba Fett, where it's like, oh, you know, we lose him again, you know, like there's this whole like back and forth in that sort of area. But I think they've done very well in this area of, okay, we have Omega back, and now we can progress the story forward in a different approach rather than focusing it around her. Of more so, okay, here's these sort of tasks that they still have to do after, you know, getting her back.
Yeah, I almost feel like the Imperials or Dr. Hemlock's sort of hunt for Omega is almost going to be the B plot, whereas the A plot is going to be, I think, wrapping up the whole end of the clone army, that whole arc that they've been building up to. Because, yeah, I was kind of worried that it's like, oh, it's going to be this ping pong of Omega getting captured, and now she's free again. She's captured, and now she's free. But no, I'm glad that we're seeing more of the clone resistance plot. I really like that. And Infiltration actually opens with some characters we haven't seen in a while. The senators, Senator Singh, who was a separatist senator, and Senator Chuchi, who was a Republic senator, they're both kind of on the same page now because they both oppose the Empire, having a secret meeting that's facilitated by Rex and his clone squad. I kind of liked this sort of cloak and dagger kind of spy stuff in these two episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I like seeing that the you're maybe starting to see the seeds of the rebellion finally. You know, it's like something more organized than just, you know, potentially, I guess, instead of just, you know, little cells, you know, resisting the Empire. Maybe now these two planets or whatever will come together and something bigger will come.
Yeah, I like the kind of enemy of my enemy is my friend angle that Singh and Chuchi were able to kind of come to a sort of understanding where it's like, yeah, we were on opposite sides of the Clone Wars, but, you know, the greater evil of the Empire, all those kind of political considerations, you know, go away in the face of the obvious tyranny of the Empire. But their meeting is interrupted by an assassin who we find out is one of the ones we have seen previously, where it's these kind of brainwashed Jason Bourne clone assassins. but he, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the two senators do escape. So that's, you know, we're, I assume we're going to pick up with their plot sometime in the future. But Rex and his troops, you know, actually capture the Imperial clone assassin and take him back to their base camp. Do either of you know if we've seen this planet before that the clone base camp is on? It looked vaguely familiar to me, but I couldn't place where I've seen it.
I'm not sure offhand.
I didn't recognize it off the, you know, top of my head.
Yeah, it had that the sort of disused temple or whatever it was, almost had that Jabba's palace kind of look that we've seen on architecture on other planets. It almost kind of, and the fact that it was on top of a steep cliff, it almost reminded me of, unless I'm wildly misremembering it, the planet from the Clone Wars movie, from the 2008 movie. I feel like, unless it just looks similar because of the lighting, I think that planet also had a pink sky or something. But it may just be a visual similarity. You know, there's so many planets in the galaxy. Some of them are bound to look alike anyway.
They very much overlap, and I will agree with that one.
Yeah, but it is a pretty cool base camp. They've got, you know, quite a few clones there already who are establishing kind of a resistance cell. And they mention that these assassins are kind of activated because they cut back to Tantus and they show a new assassin being activated to go out and take out the assassin who was captured. Apparently, when you capture them alive, they have some untraceable internal tracking device so the Empire can just hunt them down or, you know, when they get compromised. It was interesting to see actually the clone commando guy kind of running that op. I guess Hemlock has kind of delegated them as like, okay, you're in charge of like all the black ops stuff. I would like to see them eventually explain why it is that the clone commandos in particular are so loyal to the Empire. When they're phasing out all the clones, the rest of them, the Empire seems to be keeping most of the commandos. So that would be, yeah.
And, you know, whenever you even see them in the episode, so normally at least whoever, like, the group is, you see them commanded by at least one of those clone commandos who are designated with, like, that blue-lighted helmet, almost, which is really interesting to see.
Right, yeah. On a side note, that there are a few, like, they're not canon anymore, but there's actually a whole series of novels based around the clone commandos, which my brother has been reading, and he tells me are pretty good. So I'll have to look into that, because I like the look of the clone. And I know there's the famous video game as well. There was the Clone Commandos video game. So I like their style. They almost remind me of, like, if Master Chief was in Star Wars. So I'm interested to know more about them. But they discover that the Rex and his team discover that the assassin who they've captured has essentially one of those, like, bounty pucks, except it has a whole list of targets on them, including the senators, and also Omega is on this Imperial hit list. So Rex sends out a message to Hunter and the Batch to show up at their secret hideout so they can, one, inform them that Omega's on this list, and two, because they want to interrogate Crosshair, because he knows more about Tantus, and Rex and his guys want to plan an op to go hit Tantus. What did you guys think of, like, the tension in this episode between the other clones and Crosshair? Because the Batch may be beginning to trust him again, but to these guys, he's still an unknown quantity.
Well, I mean, what I found was interesting, you know, obviously Hauser has a vendetta, or maybe a vendetta against him because of what happened on Ryloth, and he explains it. But then Rex, on the other hand, is under the belief, I think, that, well, if Hunter and the Bad Batch, you know, trust him and Echo, then we can trust him. So it's kind of interesting to see how, you know, he's willing to take in anybody, and he's even actually willing to take in the command, the assassin, if, you know, the guy wants to change and he can help him. He's always looking to help. But then you have the factions where, you know, people like Hunter in the past has taken it personally. Hauser's taken it personally with Crosshair, and it's when they have to, you know, and that causes a lot of that conflict.
I feel like with Rex, it may be that since Ahsoka never gave up on him and was willing to, you know, go to all extreme lengths to get his chip removed and stuff like that, that Rex is pretty much willing to, that he thinks no clone is, like, so far gone that they can't be saved.
Yeah. I think Crosshair is just sort of becoming this very interesting character of developing whether or not people can trust him or not. Just because of him being gone for so long and working for the Empire for so long, of, you know, where is he currently at? And I don't feel like we've entirely seen that. I mean, we've had the interactions between him and Hunter, but, you know, I don't feel like we've fully uncovered the story of what's entirely going on in his mind to a point where we can be like, yeah, we can fully trust him or not. You know, there's still a lot of uncertainty within his character to sort of delve into there.
I agree. Yeah. And even if he's truly turned against the Empire, he's still grappling with the fact that he's committed atrocities. I mean, like, going back to, like, you know, much earlier episodes when, you know, like, he orders the prisoners to be killed, Saw Gerrera's guys. You know, so, like, he has done things for the Empire that now he's probably not proud of, you know, so I'll be very interested to see his development. And this show does not shy away from dealing with traumatic topics. So,
well, and the thing, too, it's like when he gets introduced, or when he ends up meeting all these new, or are getting reintroduced to his brothers at different levels, whether it's the Bad Batch and now Rex and his group, you know, he's got that serious, kind of guarded side about him, you know, and, you know, not that sensitive a side. And it's only when, you know, like, especially when Hunter saw the sensitive side of him in the prior, you know, the episode with the helmets of the fallen clones on that ice planet. And then, you know, hearing more about, you know, or later on in the next episode, when, you know, Hauser sees how he treats Omega and stuff, he sees that there is a different, you know, side to Crosshair that maybe they didn't see before. So it's kind of, so it's like that guy you meet and he's like, oh, you know, he really serious and stuff. And then you find out as you just get to know him more that, you know, he does have a softer side and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of, so I think that's part of his problem too. I mean, if you just walk up to the guy, he's not going to be like, you know, a guy you want to sit down and have a beer with or something. It's just, you might want to be, you know, you're going to be on guard initially, and he's on guard too, because, you know, it's probably not easy for him to be that sensitive either, or try to come across as, you know, since he was always the good soldier.
Right. Yeah. Omega gets kind of an upgrade. We see Echo gives her a new weapon, the energy crossbow, which is cool. I like that she has this very unique tool. And we saw it used in these episodes, but I hope we get to see it much more. I like that it's kind of a combination of her previous energy bow, but also very blaster-like, because we've seen her use a blaster in the last few episodes.
Yeah, and it's definitely developing her character to be more, I guess, fitting of what the clones are used to, of this sort of trooper-type person, as well as sort of fitting her into her own style, as keeping her as a unique character where she went from this, you know, bow essentially into a rifle type, and mixing them both together to show that she's both, you know, clone and also this original character, where the story can develop her better.
So on the planet, they're interrogating Crosshair. They're trying to see if they can get information out of the assassin who they've captured. But in the meantime, the planet is infiltrated by the second assassin, who's been sent to take care of the first guy. And this may be a complete coincidence, but the sort of arrowhead-shaped fighter that the assassin arrives in looks very similar to what I've seen of some of the very early concept drawings for Imperial fighters from the original trilogy. Because originally, in the original trilogy, the fighters were not the classic TIE fighter shape that we know now. They were supposed to have a more dagger head shape, you know, an arrowhead. But Lucas later decided he wanted that for the big cruisers, and so that became Star Destroyers. So I was just wondering, you know, either it's just because so many Imperial ships are arrowhead shaped that they just decided to use that again, or it may be a visual reference to like the early Imperial fighters. But I liked it a lot. I thought it was a cool stealth ship.
Yeah, that was my first thought, was mostly, you know, as a bounty hunter wanting a stealth ship. Well, not a bounty hunter, but, you know, I guess an assassin. But, and bounty hunter, I guess, too, since he's supposed to get the target of Omega, but.
Right, and the assassin didn't even know Omega was going to be there. Mm-hmm. That's part of the thing. He's just sent in to kill the guy who's been compromised, his colleague. He's sent to just, you know, finish him off. But he discovers that Omega's there and actually sends a message back to the Imperials where he checks in. He's like, okay, what should I do? And they're like, you know, we need the girl alive. Kill the compromised guy and as many clones as you can, but keep the girl alive. Meanwhile, they're interrogating Crosshair, and they're trying the, you know, Hauser and the other clones are trying to figure out, okay, you used to work for the Empire. You were actually part of this assassin program at one point. Are we really supposed to believe they just let you out? Like, you know, and that, how did you not make the cut? And I like what he says. Crosshair says, being defective is in my nature, which I thought was an interesting comment, where it's like, I'm not sure how much you can say being defective is in anybody's nature, but it's clearly what Crosshair believes about himself, you know? So I thought that was like an interesting little revelation into what's going on the inside. So yeah, the right in the middle of their interrogation, the new assassin is able to shoot the old one dead. And I like how, like, you know, everybody just reacts immediately. You have, you know, everyone's laying down suppressing fire. There's immediate chaos. I thought it was a pretty good action scene. We even have the use of a flamethrower, which ends up bringing down the house. what did you guys think of this kind of, you know, climactic sort of battle that sort of ends the episode?
Well, I was just surprised how many of those explosives the assassin carries. Because, you know, the first one, when they're running through the tunnels, dropping them around, and then this guy is, you know, just loading them up outside wherever he can, and then, you know, and then cutting the lines or whatever it was before it all started, too, that, you know.
Oh, yeah. Where is he keeping all that stuff?
So, but I mean,
he's like Link from Legend of Zelda. He's got like a magic like pouch, you know.
the ideal version of Wrecker, where he can just explode and cause chaos wherever he wants, almost.
Right. So, no, but I mean, the action was really good. I mean, it was a little tough sometimes determining who was doing what, though, I thought, because, like, you know, they're all clones and, you know, with the...
Yes.
You know, sometimes you can tell who they are, but it's like when it's all dark like that as well, it's always hard for me to distinguish sometimes. But
yeah, in my notes, I originally mistook Fireball for Hauser. So when Hauser shows up alive in the next episode, that confused me for quite a bit. I was like, wait, well, didn't he get blown up? But no, that was apparently Fireball. Oh, and I think the Batch needs to start paying attention to Batcher more. I mean, as a dog, she clearly knows when things aren't A-OK. And they're just like, oh, you just need some more food. Here you go. And I'm like, no, listen to your dog.
Right.
So there's a cave in. The Batch and Rex and a few of the other clones escape in the confusion. But meanwhile, an Imperial Strike Force shows up. You've got two dropships. And this is an interesting Strike Force because it's not just stormtroopers. You've got stormtroopers, but there are also Imperial clones. So clones that have not been... Because I was under the impression that all the clones got pretty much sent to Tantus, except for the commandos. But no, you have regs. You have regular clones integrated with stormtroopers, an Imperial commando, and in a big character reveal, the ARC trooper Wolf is leading the mission. And I was very glad to see him because I know he's one of the three who survives into Rebels. So all this time I've been like, where's Wolf? What did you guys think of that character reveal?
I personally love Wolf as a character, and you know, seeing him be able to actually like seeing this like middle area, I guess, of him of from the Clone Wars into being able to see him into the Bad Batch, Rebels is the end area, and just seeing this in between area of like where is his mind at and what sort of happens in between is a very interesting sort of section to be able to delve into of. You know, where does he sort of turn with the Empire, almost, and how he progresses as an individual?
Yeah, because in the beginning of the episode, episode 7, you know, when they show up on the planet, it's interesting because he's like, wait, these aren't insurgents, they're clones. And then the assassin, number 2, I guess, you know, says, no, they're both, you know, but... You know, but he just sees, you know, his clones, I would assume, as his brother still. Whereas, you know, and then you find out later, you know, or he's not aware of everything that's going on, I guess.
Yeah. And just as an aside, Wolf has the coolest armor. I love the design of his. And I'm glad that the Empire let him keep the war paint because the other regs are just like, you know, in their old kind of just white to blend in with the stormtroopers. They should not have sent the stormtroopers at all, by the way, because by the end of episode 2, all the stormtroopers are gone. None of them make it alive out of this, and only the clone troopers. It was interesting to see this, for lack of a better word, integrated unit, because I don't think we've seen that before with the Imperials, except for like Crosshair and the two... two or three trainees he was with in a much earlier episode. But I like seeing the clones and the early stormtroopers kind of operating together. I think it's like, because we are still in this middle period where the Empire is still in the process of phasing out Republic equipment and Republic stuff and replacing them with the more familiar Imperial stuff. And it was cool to see a guy like Wolf still in command. Like, the Empire actually trusts him to command the unit, which was cool. But yeah, that leads us into the next episode, Extraction, which I felt kind of gives away the game. I'm like, okay, I'm like, so they're going to get away by the end of this episode.
Oh, at the beginning of the episode, before it started, though, my concern was what you were talking about earlier. It's kind of like, what? Okay, you're infiltrated, you know, by the commando, and then are they extracting Omega again, and she's going back to Tantus? You know, and that was a little bit of a concern for, that's what initially I was wondering about was, you know, is it going to be like some of the movies where it's like, let's go to the Death Star. Let's get off the Death Star. Let's go. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
We find out pretty quickly that the operative survived having the roof cave in on him. I don't know what else they've done besides wipe these guys' minds, but they appear to be hardier than like normal clones, which is interesting. Yeah, Rex and the Batch are trying to find this new way out, going down this cool, I don't know what that was, that's the big shaft that they're headed down to escape. But yeah, like you said, John, Wolf is not entirely in the know. The Imperials didn't inform, they just informed him, oh, you're going to strike an insurgent base. And he finds among the rubble, you know, that some of them are clones. And so he's immediately tipped off that things are really shady here and takes an immediate dislike to the operative, the assassin guy, who is, you know, clearly has his own orders and is going to do his own thing. And Wolf is just like, okay, how do I deal with this guy?
It is interesting to see how Wolf handles the, or goes about his business and, you know, wanting to, you know, he's concerned about, okay, if we're trying to get this person out alive, why is the spire burning down right now? And then, you know, but he's also saying, you know, a lot of stuff about, you know, we're not trying to kill them, put your guns on stun, you know, and we're going to take people, you know, alive and stuff. So he had, like you're saying, he has his orders, but he's also more concerned about the welfare, I think, of, you know, what his troops perhaps, but also what their mission is, and not just, you know, taking out everybody, whereas the assassin is, his one goal is to get Omega. And well, after he takes out the other assassin, his one goal is to get Omega, and he doesn't care, you know, what damage he does. It's just to get her home or back to Hemlock.
Yeah, I like that we see Wolf as like really competent, knows what he's doing, you know, but is having to deal with all of these unknowns and variables. And you can tell he does not like that at all. One cool thing that's in my notes is that I don't think we've seen this before. Crosshair uses a rifle grenade at one point when he stays behind to slow down the operative. It's actually this kind of grenade he fits to the end of his blaster and shoots it on a wall and it explodes. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Rifle grenades in Star Wars.
No, I saw that as him giving up on his accuracy as a marksman and him being like, I can't hit these shots anymore. I'm just going to use a grenade that has a larger sort of splash damage and just hope for the best and see what happens. You know, and part of that is also seeing Crosshair as growing as an individual where he's like, yeah, I can't hit these shots anymore, but you know, I can hit within a certain area. I can hope for the best.
that would be, see, that would be like me in a first person shooter.
Yeah.
Okay, because when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, my friends and I would play Medal of Honor, and I would in the maps, I would always go for the rocket launcher. Because I knew I couldn't hit worth a darn anything. So I'm like, I needed to get that rocket launcher so I could do the most damage possible. Because then I at least had a hope of taking somebody out. Yeah, I like kind of like how you mentioned, John, where the assassin, the operative's goal is to take Omega alive, but he seems to be doing things that are counter to that. You know, Wolf complains at one point because the Batch and Rex and a few of the others get onto this little escape pod type ship that flies away. But then the operative shoots its engines out and it crashes. And Wolf's like, if your orders are to take this person alive, the girl, why did you shoot down her ship?
Yeah, and his answer was just simply, I prevented her escape, but, you know, that's, but I mean, yeah, you can see his single-mindedness of his mission.
He very much reminds me of, like, a Batman villain almost, in the, especially one of those assassin type Batman villains where he's just relentless. I'm going to do whatever it needs. I needs to do to take out this particular target or like he almost seems like, you know, he is so confident in his skills as a marksman and assassin that he pretty much knew the damage I did to that ship is not enough for when it crashes for it to blow up. So I have a pretty good chance of that she survived. He felt it was worth the risk, I guess. I like when they're all getting out of the ship and they're getting ready to kind of hoof it through the jungle because they were able to get a message out to Echo, who's going to come in another spaceship and extract them. But now they have to walk to the landing zone. And as they're getting everything ready, and it was just this nice little moment where Crosshair is kind of quizzing Omega, like, okay, do you have your crossbow? Can you carry that pack? Can you do this? And she says, ugh, you're worse than Hunter. Or you're as bad as Hunter, she says. And Crosshair goes, oh, I'm much worse. Yeah. I like his little of his affection for Omega is very charming. I like that.
It almost shows this like battle of like who's the true father almost of Omega, of Hunter versus Crosshair, who's trying to actually like almost lead the group, because there was that whole fight between the two in season one actually of The Bad Batch, of where Crosshair is saying Hunter can't really lead the group because he doesn't fully know everything and know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Where Crosshair is still trying to balance that and bring him as the leader.
And two, there's a question I just thought of this, of who's really molding Omega now?
Right.
Is it Hunter or Crosshair? Because you see Omega starting to copy Crosshair's mannerisms. On the ship when they're going, she has a toothpick and she's messing with it in her mouth like Crosshair.
Right.
So yeah, I feel that that is probably something that will come to a head later. There will be more friction between Hunter and Crosshair as to who's really shaping Omega as a person and her future. And Hauser notices, though, Crosshair's affection for Omega and brings it up and says, like, you know, what happened to you? You've changed since Ryloth, basically. And I like what Crosshair says. He says, loyalty meant something to me, but with the Empire, it didn't go both ways. I realized how disposable I was. And that's kind of, you know, a theme that we're dealing with a lot today. You know, Pope Francis talks a lot about the throwaway culture as applied to people. That we often think of human beings as disposable because they're inconvenient, you know, in one way or another. And it's just flat out wrong. You can't treat people as objects who are just disposable. And the Empire, being a totalitarian society, just views people as cogs in the machine. And when you're a cog that's not working right, they just get rid of you. And it's interesting to see that kind of message brought up in a show like this, and also to see, you know, how it's affected Crosshair, that really was his turning point to realize that I mean nothing, my loyalty means nothing to these people.
And that's the bigger thing too with the senator, and what's her last name? Chuchi.
Yeah. Chuchi. I had to look it up, but that's what it is. Yeah.
She, you know, and how she saw them as being treated as disposable, and we thought, you know, they needed something more and better because of all they'd done for the Republic. And then, you know, even Hauser, you know, I think said, you're not the only one who saw that. And it's like it seems like everyone that's rising up against the Empire, at least of the clones, like you're talking, the big issue with, you know, just being disposable and realizing, you know, that they need something more. And what's interesting too is another theme too that kind of runs with it is, okay, we were soldiers, the Empire sees us disposable, we're not disposable, but what are we meant to do? And right. Then they're fighting with that, you know, idea of, you know, where do we go from here?
Right. And you see that later too with Hunter. he really doesn't want to get sucked into this. He really doesn't want to get sucked into the fight. He wants to have a normal life as much as that's possible for Omega and for the rest of the batch. But Rex is telling him, look, you know, you can't hide behind that, and you can't trust that you'll be able to have that normal life in a situation where the Empire exists, you know, because they'll always find you. But yeah, I thought that it was it's interesting that we have that, because they were created to be soldiers. And I think that's why I think the Empire is able to sell to people that they're disposable, because they weren't born as normal people. They were created for a function, to fight as soldiers. And so the Empire's like, so their purpose is over. We've created the stormtroopers. We don't need the clones anymore. And yeah, it's just a very interesting message for a show like this to be exploring at this time in history. The operative goes rogue again. I like how we have that repeating thing. Every time Wolf turns around, that guy is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's almost like seeing him as like this initial sort of idea of the Empire using bounty hunters almost, and sort of having them work their way in, where stormtroopers can't entirely, I guess, do everything that the Empire requests, and them still having these like private sector outside people almost being able to take care of some of these side tasks where they can just give them a reward and call it at the end of the day. Because originally, whenever I saw him, I almost saw him as like a Boba Fett almost, as instead of being like an operator, see him as this bounty hunter that they just kind of send out and hope the task will be done easily, where this guy will have no trouble hunting down Omega.
Right, and we see the Empire's reliance on bounty hunters in the original trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're not, when his admirals and generals aren't getting it done, Darth Vader just calls in a whole bunch of bounty hunters.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
There's a big battle to reach the LZ, to reach the landing zone. And there's a Wilhelm scream very prominently. I think it's one of the stormtroopers, appropriately, who falls out of a gunship. I think Crosshair also like single-handedly shoots down an assault shuttle. So Crosshair for the win again.
You know, I'm still very curious to see as to what's entirely wrong with Crosshair, because there are some shots that he hits and does great with, and then, you know, AZ saying, oh yeah, you hit a total like 60% or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Your shots for training. I'm very curious to see what's going on with him there.
Yeah, and like, you know, was it the torture that he endured where he has the tremors in his hand? Or was it
just like part of his genetics of him getting older almost and having a genetic deficit start happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really hope that they close that loop later on. And Crosshair is like, he's pretty prominent in the finale of this episode, because he draws, his role now is to draw the fire of the operative so that the rest of them can get to the landing zone. And there's this cool counter sniper battle between Crosshair and the operative, but both fall into the river. And then there's a vibroblade battle. I like that we saw different forms of combat in this between Crosshair. It wasn't just them shooting at one another. When they were in the river, I just thought of this. It was almost like that first episode of Visions, where the lightsaber battle takes place in that river that's leading to a waterfall. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah.
I just thought of that. Yeah. Always, like, whenever you include a waterfall, it's almost like a time bomb in one of the, because you know eventually somebody's going to fall off. But yeah, during the fight, Hauser eventually ends up stunning the operative, because the operative almost kills Crosshair. And you get Hauser. Yeah, I like that they kind of, you know, Hauser's the one who's really originally skeptical of Crosshair, comes back and saves him by stunning the operative, who then plunges off the waterfall. Again, these guys are hardy, because they reveal later he survives that. I was certain he was a goner. I shouldn't have been, but and you have Hauser and Crosshair kind of coming to an understanding.
Well, I find interesting too, as though with this whole thing is, you know, how do all the commando, or, you know, these assassin commando characters, do they all know that Crosshair was a drop, you know, someone that didn't make the cut or whatever reason? Because because they all keep saying to, you know, why don't you ask Crosshair? You know, the first guy, he was on Tantus. And then this guy said, you had your chance to be one of us, but you chose the wrong side.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I don't know. I just found that kind of interesting. Was he, you know, did he go out on missions with some of these commandos at one point and just didn't make the cut, or saw how they did things and didn't like it? Or was there, you know, I don't know. I just
kind of. There's a possibility that perhaps if that did happen, perhaps some of Crosshair's memories of it were wiped to keep the program secure. It may really be like a Jason Bourne kind of thing where he's done things that he don't remember.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But yeah, that'll be interesting for them to explore in future episodes. Because yeah, why else would they know? Unless they're given information about the people they've been sent to assassinate, like relevant information, how would they all know that? Yeah. Especially when these are supposed to be like brainwashed, like essentially like they have one like tunnel vision, kill who we've been told to kill. It's interesting that they should have that other knowledge. And of course, right as they reach the LZ, they get caught by the remaining Imperial shuttle. And you have a very interesting back and forth between Wolf and Rex. What did you guys think of this?
It was a very powerful experience, I will say, of this overall, like a very, I would say relatively brief interaction compared to what we've seen between other characters. And, you know, having Rex remove his helmet to show his face was also a very interesting experience to see. You know, I'm seeing you as who you are rather than just as this trooper carrying out orders. And, you know, and then Wolf also removing his helmet and recognizing Rex for who he is was a very symbolic experience for me of that, of like the first time we've really seen all throughout Rebels, and, you know, this whole experience of them removing their, or I guess since the Empire has been formed, of them actually removing their helmets and, you know, being an individual rather than this soldier who's just following orders of whoever they may be. And Rex being like, this isn't who we are and who we were essentially bred to be and programmed to be and destined to be. We have our own free will still. And, you know, sort of balancing that whole area of fate versus free will, which is a very common theme throughout literature as well. And Wolf being like, yeah, you're absolutely free to go. Just that whole scene was something I really loved and enjoyed seeing.
I really liked the scene, and like, you know, it was what I find interesting though is the whole when you know, when Rex says, we're not fighting against you, we're fighting against the Empire, etc. And then, you know, they're experimenting on imprisoning and experimenting on our brothers. And he just said, you know, Wolf says, no, the Empire wouldn't do that to us, you know, and stuff. And it's kind of interesting to see, you know, how the reason why, obviously, at least in his case, he's not been brainwashed. He just thinks he's, you know, following orders like he's always has and hasn't known the other, you know, the other details that's going on. And, you know, so then, you know, and he says, you know, Wolf says, I'm a soldier of the Empire, have my orders, hand her over. So it's not quite the good soldier kind of thing, you know, but it's pretty close, you know, and it's just like he's still doing what he's been trained to do all that time. And that's when Rex has to, you know, get more personal and stuff. And
right. And he appeals to his, you know, his conscience. Rex says, you're hunting a child. I know that's not who you are. And it's that battle of, you know, duty versus conscience,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is another, you know, you can't just follow any orders you've been given. You know, if you have a properly formed conscience, if you are given an order that's, you know, obviously immoral, you know,
and that's almost tying into Crosshair of them saying the whole good soldiers follow orders. But what if an order is immoral or something that's not justified by other means?
Right. Yeah. And I just love that. It really surprised me. I'm like, he's letting them go. Really? You know, like I was genuinely surprised by that. And I wonder what repercussions there will be for Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it almost seemed too willingly to let them go. And like that last scene of them just sort of walking back onto their ship, I feel like there should have been some other sort of altercation between the two to be able to like actually let them go instead of just being like, we're gonna walk onto our ship and call it the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm wondering if do they have a tracker on them or something, or that we're letting them go but we can find them later.
Right, exactly.
Because like I feel like if Wolf comes back and tries to say to his superiors, yeah, we just let them go, that's not going to fly. Well, I was actually expecting some of the clones or maybe even the commando to take issue. But he didn't.
Right.
Nobody did. They were and none of the stormtroopers did because they were all dead by this point.
Well, I don't know. Or maybe I guess I was thinking he's just, as I thought more about it, maybe he's just stunned. You know, Wolf is. And it's like, now the gears in his head are turning and it's like, is what they're saying true? You know, and it's like,
right.
And he's sitting there and like, okay, go. But, you know, maybe he's not thinking through everything, but I don't know. It's just, or maybe the hit home. He's like, yeah, what are we doing chasing this girl?
Mm-hmm. And why are we trying to kill our own brothers? You know, right. As he was very, I feel like, yeah, it is kind of a, when you think about it that way, it is a natural like progression from the beginning of the episode where he's stunned to find that they've been shooting at and killing clone troopers.
When what's really neat though, too, though, afterwards, when the is it the one of the command, what the person says, but sir, they're traitors.
Yeah, the commando says it. Yeah.
And he says, perhaps, but they're clones. You know, we owe him that. And then,
oh, to bury the dead. Yeah.
He says, recover their fallen. Yeah. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And then, so he wanted to bury his own brothers who are the, you know, the clones. And then the trooper said they're traitors. I had that back backwards, but then, he said, yeah, but they're clones and we owe him that. So you can see where his allegiance is maybe turning more. I mean, it's always been there, but now maybe he's seeing it more as he's a brother of these clones versus a soldier of the Empire, slowly.
Right, yeah. And we know he ends up on the side of the Angels eventually, because mm-hmm. he's with Rex and Gregor, who we see, because Echo and Gregor come in for the rescue and are able to fly them out of the LZ. I caught what I believe, but who knows, maybe by this point they fixed it, but I've caught what I believe was a funny animation error at this point in the episode when Wolf and the clones go back onto the bay of the shuttle and they're all looking out. One of the regs is just like a floating helmet. He has no body. And I rewound it and then paused it because I'm like, is that in the background just a helmet sitting on a shelf? Nope. It's in line with the other clones that are standing in formation, and it's just a clone who's just a head. He has no body.
Wow.
Lovely errors done by Disney.
But it reminded me of like how you could find funny errors like that in old like Hanna-Barbera cartoons where there would always be, because they were kind of done very quickly, and they would, you know, there would always be kind of funny animation errors of that sort. But it was funny to see in 3D in 3D animation. There's a final sort of conversation between Rex and Hunter that we've alluded to before. And Rex mentions that he says, I thought that at the end of the war, it would mean an end to losing more of our brothers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's really, you know, having to deal with the fact that, you know, not only are his clones, you know, that he's recruited, there's a chance that they may be killed in combat by the Imperials. But I think he's also it's coming home to him that there are still going to be clones on the other side that he may mm-hmm. have to fight and possibly even take out. You know, that not all clones, like especially these operatives, not all clones are, you know, able, you know, they don't seemingly have the free will anymore to be converted, and to save his friends or save innocent lives, he may have to take the lives of fellow clones. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of, he's kind of realizing that.
Yeah. He's definitely facing that idea of like this ideal world where he'd be able to just be like, hey, you're doing something wrong. And then they would all just be like, oh yeah, we are. We'll totally change our ways. But you know, it's mm-hmm. not that simple
right.
in the real world of things. And you know, him sort of being able to face that is adding a lot to the character of Rex as an individual. And hopefully we can see that more. But you know, he's never going to give up this task of him trying to persuade more of the clone troopers to, you know, end their ways and become better citizen soldiers almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he kind of ends by, as we've alluded to before, Hunter, he wants to stay out of the war. He just wants to settle down, find a place where Omega can live in peace. And Rex basically tells him, like, that's not going to happen until you find out why the Empire wants her so badly. That they're going to keep coming until you find out what this is. And we almost completely missed it when when Rex and his clones are talking to Omega about her time on Tantus. She mentions that they were interested in M-Count. And the clones have heard of it, but they don't know what it is. So I thought that was interesting. I thought at least one of them would know what it referred to. But I guess that may have been above their pay grade.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Hunter has to come up with, he's just like the Mandalorian in a sense. The Mandalorian always needed to get Grogu. He's like, oh, if I can just find a place for us to live, you know, we can avoid all this. And then he eventually, you know, had to understand that he had to, you know, take the fight to him and, you know, end, well, hopefully end what, you know, why the Empire's chasing him and stuff. And Hunter has to do the same kind of thing. He just can't hide, you know, at some point, you know, especially with this M-Count thing.
Mm-hmm. The parallels with the Empire, with the Mandalorian are definitely there.
Yeah.
You know, both Omega and Grogu are wanted for cloning stuff because of their M count. And, you know, they're on the run with like a warrior type character.
Mm-hmm.
So the
mm-hmm.
parallels are definitely there. Yeah. But yeah, I thought personally that this was a great couple of episodes. I really liked that I could just watch them back to back as kind of one long episode. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love the action. I love the character stuff. The ending was just great, you know, like you said, Josh, all that character stuff between Rex and Wolf, I really enjoyed a lot. But do you guys have any sort of final thoughts about these couple episodes before we wrap up and maybe hopes for what we see next?
No, I think it's doing really well of this transitioning, I guess, into the true Empire we see in episode 4. And helping bridge that gap over this almost 20-year span between episode 3 and 4. And I've really enjoyed it. And this has helped a lot in this terms of the clone to stormtrooper and where each of these two sides almost see things going and where their roles are within the Empire. And I'm very much enjoying this whole, I don't want to say existential crisis, but like rediscovery, I guess, of what their calling almost is of the clone troopers.
Yeah.
And where they see their lives being for the next however long they may live.
I mean, I'm kind of giving up on the idea of hoping or trying to figure out where it's all going to go, in a sense. And I'm just enjoying how they're doing it. I mean, I'm kind of curious, you know, how you go from at some point, I guess, you know, where Omega is, and then to how you eventually get them wanting Grogu for this, you know, for something down the line, you know, and that kind of transition along the line, you know. But, you know, I don't think all those answers will be, but it's just, I really like how the season has gone so far with how quickly they just keep hitting story after story. And I'm just excited, looking forward to, you know, how they keep building it and where they're going to go with it.
Yeah, I've liked this series a lot from the very beginning. And Josh, I agree with what you said about seeing that transition into the Empire, because this series is answering a question that I've had since I was a teenager and saw the prequels, which was, whatever happened to the clone troopers and how did they get replaced with stormtroopers? That was always a question I had. And it's so cool to see it finally be answered and to have it make total sense. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't make any sense to me why, when I saw the prequels, why on earth would they phase out clone troopers for the stormtroopers? And how did that happen? And the fact that we're seeing it and, you know, and that this season, you know, we'll hopefully see, you know, kind of the final transition of that, since it is supposed to be the last season. It's such a cool thing, and it makes the prequel. I already you know, like the prequels, but it makes it, what they've been doing is making it, they're so much richer in retrospect, which I think is a really cool thing.
One thing I wanted to add, I was just thinking about this, was I'd be interested to see if Senator Tucci or Singh show up in Andor at some point, you know, like with Mon Mothma or something, because if they're trying to build the you know, or you know, lay the foundation or of the rebels, you know, or some kind of alliance, then you know, I wonder if one of those will show up at some point talking to her at, you know, as they work towards as she's developing her things with
Rebellion. I hope they come back to that and we see more of that intrigue. And also, it just occurred to me that by the time of the video game Jedi Fallen Order, which takes place 5 years, I think, after Revenge of the Sith, it's pretty much all stormtroopers. So it took at least 5 years, or at most 5 years, to phase out the clone troopers. But yeah, I hope they do come back to the senators. Because I think that's a loose plot thread that they're either saving for later, John, like you say, or we're going to see them later in this show. But yeah, if that's it for us, then that is it for this episode of The Secrets of Star Wars. But before we go, we would like to take a moment to thank our patrons, including Nicholas R., Peter S., Brian P., Patrick M., and Alexander M. Their generous donations help us to create The Secrets of Star Wars and all of the shows here at StarQuest, and you can join them at sqpn.com/give. And now we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What did you think of these latest episodes of Star Wars The Bad Batch? You can let us know by sending us an email at starwars@sqpn.com, or send us a message on our social media pages, or by leaving a comment on our channel on the StarQuest Discord server, which you can find at sqpn.com/discord. Until next time, Josh Bigley, thank you for joining me in sharing the secrets of Star Wars.
Always happy to join.
And John Coral, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Had a great time.
And once again, I'm Thomas Salerno. Thank you for listening to The Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Technology. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/technology.